Michael Ampey, and you're listening to the Active Learning Podcast. And let's get down to it today. This episode, we're going to be focusing on experiential education or experiential learning and how that fits into active learning, and see it in a very grand way how to do this. I am going to admit that this is something that doesn't happen very often, the tool that I'm going to talk to you about today. And it's not necessarily the tool. Now, I understand that I'm going to be promoting a tool that a university came up with, but the story is awesome. Like, I really think, I'm sure you've heard, podcasts where how I made this or how I did this and that type podcast. This is kind of this type of episode where, while the tool is going to be really cool to talk about, really hear out the words of the people that envisioned it, how it got started. And we are going to talk today about MyDispense. Essentially, in my opinion, now bias note, I was definitely involved in utilizing this tool during the pandemic for experiential learning. But I have to admit, if it wasn't for the generosity and the vision that the folks at Monash University had in building this tool, yes, I said it right, this university itself was the one that built the simulation. How a couple of years ago, they were able to build this tool, or not a couple, a few years ago, and to be able to now, during the pandemic, just helped a lot of experiential education offices in the pharmaceutical education world to be able to not derail the timeline of students completing their degrees and still being able to provide a virtual way of providing active learning. So I think this is really great stuff. So in this point, let me introduce you to the two people that I interviewed today.
Keith Sewell. I'm the Senior Project Manager for Learning Technologies in our Faculty of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences here at Monash University.
So I'm Keenan Beaumont, and I'm the Learning Technologies Developer here at Monash University's Pharmacy Faculty.
Now you're probably thinking to yourself, that's it? Only two people? Michael, I thought you said that this was a game changer for helping people with experiential learning in the pandemic. No, you're right. It was only two people. And for the initial parts, one person to get this whole thing started. Now they'll be describing a little bit more, but let's just kind of provide you some context here. So what MyDispense is essentially a tool that allows a student to log in. There are a certain amount of cases or learning exercises that the student is asked to do by their instructor. They go in. Typically what you'll see is, a list of medications. You might have a tool that helps you build a label and figuring out where to place the label. There are opportunities where you interview patients that are coming in that want their prescriptions filled. And there's a lot of other ways to do it, as well as the ability of the assessment. So that's essentially what MyDispense is in a nutshell. Definitely consider Googling MyDispense and just take a look for yourself at what people have been able to do. Now let's really quickly dive into how this project got started. Here's Keith.
Originally, it started as quite a modest project just within the faculty to address the issue that we had with our essentially our mock dispensary that we had on campus. So I think a lot of schools of pharmacy have a physical dispensary for their students to practice dispensing skills and to get some hands-on learning. And it's a tremendous resource, and it has the highest possible fidelity because you're doing the job for real. But it has some limitations in that it's resource intensive. It requires a number of members of staff to run the facility. And also it provides a bottleneck for student access. So if you've got a lot of students, and we typically have 200 students per year group, in a cohort, then getting 200 students through one single room, one piece of resource like that, provides a high quality experience, but it doesn't provide an experience that they can access at their convenience.
I like what Keith said here, in which they already had some sort of simulation on campus, this idea of having one shop, you know, where people were able to come in and provide their mock dispensaries or mock, you know, pharmacy experiences. But the way that, you know, enrollments need to happen and to meet the demand of the profession or any profession for that matter, it's very hard to do it. And I think that in this situation that Keith was describing during the day that I interviewed them, I see the same thing happening with virtual reality, in which it's great to have these limited amounts of sets that people can go in and try it out. But if it becomes more of a mainstream situation, you know, are we going to have the capacity in higher education to provide virtual reality? Which is why I've been a little bit more vocal on the augmented reality side, because you can build augmented reality on people's phones with the cameras. It's just much easier to provide that virtual reality experience. Now, before I paint you a rosy picture that this all fell into place relatively well, it was well planned out, that, you know, they had a year or two to really figure things out. No, actually, it was the exact opposite. They couldn't find a tool. They were crunched for time. Keith said the first two iterations of the tool before they finalized the third iteration, it was about 12 weeks when they started the project to when they finally got to a place where they were working at. I just find that incredible. Before they hired a developer in Keenan, and Keenan describes a little bit about what the early days were like, and here's him talking about it now.
I don't know if you've got anything to say about the early days.
Yeah, it was pretty rough to get started. Like when I first jumped in, it was like a very big transitory period where Keith used to still have to edit things directly in the database and things like that, where it wasn't very user-friendly. You couldn't make things really on your own. And one of the very first things that I jumped in to do was to start building the admin stuff where you could make your own things. And so you became less well, you could actually do things without having to directly edit database entries and things like that. And it became way more, well, usable, I guess.
Certainly, you did not want me getting my hands inside the database, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah, the very dark old days of my dispense right there.
Yeah. I think that one of those turning points, actually, when Keenan came on board, because what we had in version 1 and version 2 was something that was functional from the student's perspective, but we didn't have time on those first two versions to create something that worked well for the instructors. And so that's why I was heavily involved in when creating cases to put into my dispense, literally changing database fields. So one of Keenan's first accomplishments was to build that administrative interface that allowed us to easily make cases. And that was a big turning point.
Before we continue, I have to make this shareable note of our interview where we discuss about how usually when academic innovation happens, it happens where things just are put together in the last minute and we figure out something cool happened, and we called it controlled anarchy. So listen really quickly to this little tidbit that we had when we were conversing.
The first two iterations of my dispense were very rushed in by our external developers. And so we had a feature list that we had to hit. And, you know, they threw the kitchen sink at it. And it probably wasn't the most elegant code. And then when Keenan came along and kind of observed some of the inefficiencies and then got his hands dirty in the code itself, I mean, one of the first things he did was rewrite large chunks of my dispense. And it really was a turning point. And this was 9 years ago, and we haven't allowed him to do anything else since then.
it's crazy to me what you saying that. It's just like, it's funny because like I always have, when we have these gripe sessions about, you know, we know X semester's coming. We know the date. We know what courses are being ran. But for some reason, with these academic innovations or academic technologies, it always ends up being like a last minute, like we have to throw everything together. And like, we can make it intentional. We could be all fancy and say, oh, this is a scrum, you know, do the whole lean thing, right? But at the end of the day, that's not what we're doing. We're just, it's like almost controlled anarchy, isn't it? Like,
yeah, I think, yeah, probably the three of us could write a book on the new project management methodology of controlled anarchy. I like that. It's good, yeah.
Oh, that is so, yeah, it's very, very accurate.
It is. And, you know, I guess our design methodology is probably more agile than agile, isn't it? We do believe in sort of rapid prototyping and I think with a product like this, particularly in the early days, you're doing a lot of experimentation to find out what works.
Now, for those of you who are wondering where we could get some inspiration for the story, for what they just talked about here, to me, it deals with making sure you have the appropriate resources available to you. And if you don't, advocating for it. What was really nice to hear was that, yeah, you know, creation is messy. It takes time. You know, you may not have the full skill set to do any type of the active learning activity, especially if you're doing these kind of bigger level digital creations of academic innovation that happen at Monash University here. But, you know, it took, you know, some brainstorming. You know, Keith did talk about he worked with a subject matter expert within the university to help him make the tools available and the features right on. But at the end of the day, you know, you heard Keith saying to Keenan, like, I bet after you got hired that you were just trying to make sure that I didn't touch too much stuff. And I feel like sometimes as an instructional designer who is more of the learning technologies person in my office right now, sometimes I try to respect the IT people that I work with. You know, I don't want to be like, oh, yes, I know HTML, you know, that kind of thing. I want to respect the hard tech people that are out there that can actually produce and develop activities that I think we need more of, like my dispense. I think that that's very important. But know that it's not going to feel 100% confident to you if you're doing something innovative in academia, whether it is such a digital creation like this, or if it's something simple as doing a very simple active learning activity that you've never tried before. The other thing that I really loved is them saying, after a certain amount of iterations, the goal was, how do we make it as simple as possible for the end users, so that, you know, Keith, the person who's not the developer, that didn't have to go into the databases and change each individual thing, that he actually hired somebody later on to help that be much easier. So for those of you who are using My Dispense right now, we can really thank Keenan for providing an admin opportunity so that we as end users could change what My Dispense is, especially given the fact that this is not like a video game company that's producing this. So it's a big accomplishment, I believe, as well as what Keith indicated to Keenan, or about Keenan. And let's talk a little bit more about what happened during the pandemic. Again, you would think, could only two people get the things that they needed to get done with the crazy amount of demand you would suspect is going to happen with such a free tool?
Through the COVID period, that was pretty much what we had. It was more than a handful. It was hundreds of schools of pharmacy who became interested and wanted to get engaged with My Dispense. Yeah, I also need to set the context that we don't just give people My Dispense. We also host it for them. So we will create a server and install My Dispense and get it up and running for you. And And that's one of the things that, you know, it made it a very popular platform, because the barriers to each institution coming on board, their barriers to adoption were minimized.
I love this situation that he describes here. Again, similar to the resource allocations and creating an admin last time, it's almost, if you're an instructional designer listening to this podcast episode, it really shows you to, when you're doing any type of technological integration where you know it's going to enhance the activities of whatever university, college, or school that you're in, how can you make it so that there is a lowest possible barrier to entry for the faculty members or the teachers to get involved in the technology? Because once you get them in and show them what it's like, the more likely you're going to get one or two of your rock stars to really buy in and believe in it. And that's what I love about this situation here. Now let's briefly take a look at the administration side of things here really quick. Again, when you're talking about active learning and academic innovation in active learning, sometimes evaluations are stacked up against us, because we know that most academic innovation activities and active learning activities, especially if you're doing it for the first time, you're probably going to see some dinks in your reputation for the first a couple iterations of this. So if you're doing a teaching situation, you know, you are going to have worries about that, and you're going to need an administrator or a dean or your program director to be on board with what you're doing and what are those conversations going to look like. What I loved about this situation, although it's not necessarily directly involved with a particular class, that, you know, Keith and Keenan were more of the backdoor people to really, you know, or behind the stage to really understand what's going on with the tool. So they had to work with their, you know, administrators that they reported to when this pandemic hit and they had a influx of demand. By the way, Keith said that recently they hit 1 million exercises being created in My Dispense, which shows you over the last couple of years how great this tool has been. But it's interesting to hear what they had to say about what their administrators thought about this new problem that they created for themselves utilizing this new tool that they had.
It wasn't hard, actually, Michael. In that respect, we are incredibly fortunate. So in terms of complete exposure, you know, I have a budget that I need to operate within. Normally that budget is for the general provision of learning technology services to the faculty. And I'm fortunate in that most of that budget can be allocated to the development of resources. So we're very fortunate in that respect. And also, we're incredibly lucky to have a visionary general manager in our faculty. So I report to the general manager of the faculty. So Marion Costello is our general manager, and her philosophy is one of shared practice and sharing resources. And she believes that if we are fortunate to have the resources to develop these educational tools, then we should share that good fortune. And that is our philosophy. So pretty much everything that we develop here, we try to share. And we actually also create a platform to share those resources. So there wasn't a big task from my part to convince Marion that we should resource this growth of My Dispense. She was behind it all of the way, 100%.
Now, I know what you said. Well, I can't do that in my situation. It's brilliant to have a visionary, you know, and to have a visionary who provides the appropriate budget allocation for that. That's very hard to come by. I mean, it's not impossible. A lot of universities are doing really great things. They might not be as focused in academic technology. So I'm not dogging on anybody who are not focused on this type of stuff, because maybe they're focused on other things. You know, not each university has their specific mission and strategic plans. And so maybe it's not in the cards for stuff like this to take place. But when there is a push for doing some sort of academic innovation, I always come down to you have to allow space for it to happen. You know, we've had conversations in the faculty development world about, you know, are stipends, like cash stipends, you know, do they work? Well, some people say, well, not really, because they're going to get taxed on it, so they're not going to get the main thing. Some of them might be making decent amount of money already. You know, what's an extra $150 to, you know, a medical educator who might make a lot more than that in a given month? You know, some faculty members were more motivated to have a course release where, you know, they focused on the academic innovation instead of teaching one of the sections that they are normally required to teach. So obviously, you know, you need to provide some sort of way to create this open space. And for them, even though they weren't an instructor, they felt they had that freedom and that confidence from their general manager that this was the way to go. And to be able to share the experiences with other institutions and spread the love of this academic innovation was cool. You know, I don't want to overextend time here because I want to, you know, stay focused on active learning here. I want to fast forward the last part of the interview where we talked about this open pedagogy versus backward design situation. And then also I want to look at how OER can lower the barriers of active learning taking place. So here we go.
So at the beginning, you're trying to find out what it is that is required. And that's not always easy. We have a fantastic group of educators here in our faculty of pharmacy here at Monash, but still it's difficult to communicate what exactly is required when you're transitioning something from the real world to a virtual world. So I've got a set of criteria in my mind of things that I need to try and address, and the academics have their learning outcomes that they want to address. And sometimes there's a lot of work to try and match those two things together. So my decisions in the early days were, we're going to simulate a dispensary. How are we going to do that? Are we going to be prescriptive in any sense? Are we going to have scaffolding in any sense? Are we going to guide the students? And my initial instinct was not to do that. My philosophy was, let's give them an environment which simulates the dispensary as closely as we can with the technology limitations that we have, and then allow the students to do the elements of the dispensing process in their own way, and allow them to make mistakes and give them feedback on those mistakes. Because what I wanted to create was a safe environment in which they can make mistakes, because there is a tremendous amount of learning to be had from making a mistake and reflecting on that. So I didn't want to guide them. And so that went against some of the instincts of some of our instructors, but we stuck with that.
That whole little tidbit that Keith talked about here was very reflecting on my part, because people have these debates about what comes first, the chicken or the egg, as far as, you know, you don't want to choose technology for technology's sake. That's typically the learning technologies kind of approach to utilizing active learning class, classroom technologies, or even online learning, active learning technologies. But at the same time, you know, do we make an exception for creating an environment? At the end of the day, for example, a learning management system is an environment. How much of an open space or an open world, kind of like what the My Dispense team created, where they wanted to create almost like this academic open world for pharmacy students to just do whatever it is that they want to do in line with what the subject matter expert that they were working with provided to them, saying, well, at the end of the day, this is what we do in the workplace. So it's very active learning to say, okay, what's the real world application of what you do in an everyday life? And can we mock that? And then kind of go back around and do, the learning objectives. And I think at the time I asked them about, you know, that open pedagogy is clashing with backward design. And you know, after rehearing the interview, it really wasn't, because at the end of the day, you know, backward design is talking about, you know, at the end of the day, what do you want students to achieve? Well, for pharmacy schools, the achievement is, can they do what they can do in a pharmacy or in Monash terms, dispensary? So they are starting with the results in mind and how do you assess them, but they're kind of putting the learning objectives almost before the assessment results for providing this kind of open world active learning. So I'm going to have to chew on that a little bit more of, okay, when you're creating a very high level active learning simulation like this, do you start off with the real world first? How do you capture the real world through the subject matter expert where you start designing the things? Then when you get into the instructional level, that's when the backward design of starting with the learning objectives first began. So I'm really curious to see how I'm going to mull that over in the coming months after listening to this interview. So let's really quickly jump to the final part of it, reflecting on their experience building this tool and what's next on the horizon for them and maybe for higher education.
That's an interesting question. And I think you've segued into it very well, actually, with OER and sharing of resources and sharing of expertise and sharing of experience and knowledge. I think that is critical to this kind of thing succeeding. Sharing is absolutely everything. And we actually have a meeting immediately after speaking to you with some colleagues of ours in the USA. I don't know if you know Clark Kevido from University of Kentucky. He is with Sarah Vordenberg,
yeah,
from Michigan. They are our two go-to people in the USA for My Dispense. And they have been incredible in helping us. They've been wonderful collaborators. And they've helped us to support My Dispense in the USA, because we have by far the largest number of schools of pharmacy using My Dispense geographically in the USA. I think we have something like 90 universities or 90 schools of pharmacy in the USA using My Dispense. And we're going to meet with them very soon to discuss what the next step is to providing more resources to our colleagues in the USA. So it's all about the willingness just to put in a little bit of your time and effort, and the willingness to share. And one of our big goals, taking it further, is to provide a platform that allows people to share cases easily. Now, there is an import-export system, so that's step one. Step two is building up the community, building up that community of practice so that we have confidence in each other to share freely.
Again, it's one of those things, along with the just opportunity to create active learning. And usually active learning can be very contextual. You know, I'm thinking of John Seely Brown and Douglas Thomas in their New Culture of Learning book, and them talking about it's more about context than content. And I think that there's a lot of time that a particular context provides itself the opportunity to discover an active learning activity or an academic innovation. And what's very intriguing to me in higher education is we do have a tendency to be very siloed. And some would argue that during this pandemic, siloization was even worse, because you don't have those informal interactions in a building like you once had. Everything is very formalized, that if you were going to meet with somebody, it was going to be in a Zoom call, like I will Zoom you. And a lot of people joke around about how, you know, we don't even call people that much anymore, that everything is like, oh, I'll Zoom you or I'll send you a Zoom link. It's like, no, a phone call is just fine type of situation. But I've always been an advocate for, you know, at least for faculty development administrators or instructional designers, is do what you can to provide a space for sharing the activities. You know, obviously you want to ask your subject matter experts if you could share you know, what they've done with the rest of the, you know, educator community at the school that you're in or the college or university. But just this idea of you know, sharing what you came up with, because at the end of the day, we're all educators and we're all trying to make the best learning experiences for our students. And we know over the last like many years of higher education, there's more and more demand and responsibilities that all of us have to, you know, complete, which is harder for us to take time to really try to, you know, fail once so that we can make our learning experiences better. So how can we easily share with each other, you know, so that, you know, if you already took the legwork out of providing the activity, you know, you could share it with others so they don't have to worry about it. And hopefully in the future, it'll come back to you where you can, you know, take somebody's idea and make it into your own in the activity. That is it. I hated having to chop up this interview to this even short amount of time. We spent about an hour talking. If you want to hear the whole interview, I have the file, so please feel free to reach out to me and we can discuss that going forward. But again, thank you for Keenan and Keith for saving some of the experiential education requirements that we had to deal with in the pandemic. And thank you for the tools that you provided the pharmacy education world. If you have any other questions, concerns, you can reach me out on Twitter at Situationalist, or you could you know, reach me out on email, michael.lambie@cuanchiefs.edu. Take care and have a good rest of your day.